Continued Uncertainty brings you
Phoenix City.
Welcome to Phoenix City. We're back after a few weeks off. We had very little to talk about because nothing was happening. But I'm joined by Dave. How you doing, Dave?
Not too bad.
I do like your sweater. Nobody can see it, but it's a very nice sweater.
Glorious.
It's yes. Warm, which is the main thing on a day like today.
Has got cold, hasn't it? Frosty's here.
I am.
What's that thing set up behind you? Is it like a home gym or something, is it?
It's a clothes rack.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, that's the opposite of a clothes gym. And Ella, you're here from up north. How you doing, Ella?
I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, just ticking on. Anyway, we've got Dome on the line, so we'll jump into a chat with him and come back and chat a bit later. One in Phoenix FC General Manager, David Dome. Domey, how's it going?
Good evening, guys. Good to be here. Never a dull day, is it? Never a dull day. There's always something going on and plenty of things to be working on, especially after what happened end of last week. So, look, it's certainly not regulation A-League season by any stretch of the motion. And what are we now? May? We
Sixth.
Would, no, we'd still be going. We'd still be playing. So we're not even in the off-season. It's still all happening.
Yeah, well, obviously a bit of a different podcast situation for us. Usually we'd be in the room with you having a beer, but this time we're over the old Zoom, which we've become very accustomed with. So thank you very much for giving up your Wednesday evening to have a chat to us. I mean, let's just talk straight off the bat. You've mentioned the A-League. Any indication beyond the talks about August that we've heard, is that almost confirmed? Is that highly likely? What's the situation there?
I think we need to... In the context of everything I'm going to say tonight has to be, this is the understanding as of today.
Yeah.
And as you guys would have known over the last couple of weeks, it's literally changed. You know, it can flip and flop very, very quickly.
Yeah.
The stuff that happened at the end of last week, so the resumption of the league in, let's say, July, August this year, Greg O'Rourke sent a note around saying, can we have because we have regular CEO Zoom conferences, very much like this one, but they're kind of irregular in that they happen. They're not scheduled, and Greg will call them as required. But it normally ends up being like between 2 and 3 a week. This one came through on a Friday at about, I think it was about 4:30, saying, "Can we have one at 6:30?" And we kind of went, "Okay, something's going to happen because that's very, you know, short notice." And then we got on the call, and Greg said, "Well, look, Fox has come back. They want us to resume the league, which is great. Everyone was keen." Or at least, you know, most of the clubs were keen. Let's get back into it. What does it look like? And at that stage, and this is currently our understanding, is we are looking to resume sometime in August. Where, we don't know. What it looks like, we don't really know, but it might be similar to how we were looking at it at the end of the season, which is running 2-3 games over a 7-day window. To try and get through the season and then into the finals. So that's currently our understanding. We don't know. We're now looking and have begun the talks with the players. When's the best time to go? When do they want to go? How do they want to go? Where do we assemble the players? So we're just working on that now. But certainly a little bit of detail to work through. Yeah, but the positive thing is at least we're working towards a date now. Whereas up until, you know, 1 week ago, we weren't even talking about the league being resumed at all. So at least that's positive, right?
Absolutely. I mean, having a talk of rather than just calling off the season, which would have been disastrous for the Phoenix, given the results that have been coming through, would have been awful. You mentioned that it sounds like you're waiting on Fox to come back before you could do anything. Was the resumption of the league always broadcaster dependent?
Yes, I think so. In terms of given the broadcaster pays the majority of the players' salaries and you know one of the major contributions to most of the club's revenue lines, then we're always waiting on what Fox wanted to do and how the FFA was going to work with Fox. And, you know, we now have this like three-part type arrangement where it's Fox, the leagues, in the FFA, and everyone's trying to work through it. But to be honest, I think James Johnson's been very good since he's come on board. He seems to be quite much, you know, quite a balanced individual, and he's working very well with Greg O'Rourke and his team with the clubs.
So that's James Johnson at FFA and Greg O'Rourke working for the league.
Yes, correct. Yes. With the PFA, John DeLuca at the PFA. So things are ticking over. There's still a lot of work to be done. We don't know how it's all going to play out in terms of what it's going to mean for salary cap and all this sort of stuff. But the signs are positive so far. But it's always been essentially how Fox would going to want to complete the season, given that they are the broadcaster and they have to front up all the technology and the hardware to get this thing done. We were just conscious of the we weren't going to make any decisions until those talks had taken place.
Was it a little bit touch and go about whether they would want to resume the league at all? There was talk that maybe they missed a payment toward the clubs, things like that. Was that a worry?
Well, we just didn't know because they. I think to be fair to Fox, they'd had it was not just us. They got NRL and AFL, and they were working through the. And as you can see, AFL still don't have a date to come back with. NRL have sort of drawn this line in the sand about May 28th, and they're working towards that date. But I read today in the Australian media that Nine is a party to that. Nine is the free to wear partner in Australia for NRL. So they're a major party to that, but they're currently outside that circle of who's discussing the return of the NRL, which is unusual. So Blandy's at the NRL is handling it quite a different way. He seems to be going bullet a gate. We're just going to arrange something and throw things out there and draw lines in the sand, and we work backwards from that, which is an unusual way to do it. But it looks like he's going to get it done. So we've been slightly different in that it's a bit more collaborative between us. The FFA and the PFA and the players. So look, then coming back to your original point, didn't really know how it was going to play out. Fox, I think it's well publicised that Fox did miss that the first deadline for that payment. But that's not necessarily that they weren't ever going to pay it. It was just obviously they were working through their own timelines with the other codes as well. And then we were waiting for what they were going to come back to the A-League with.
And you mentioned the resumption of the NRL being fairly quick. Sounds like the Warriors are going into a pretty similar situation you guys did last time round. I think was it early March that you guys went into 2 weeks of isolation? Would that be the same setup that the Phoenix go back into in July when this hopefully resumes?
That's our current understanding. So in the absence of a Trans-Tasman bubble, which doesn't look like it will be in place before July, that would be how we would set ourselves up. That we would, at the moment, the plan is to assemble the playing squad back here in Wellington for the boys coming back from overseas. We'll have to do 2 weeks somewhere, then get them training. Again, it'll depend. It's like I say, it's really day by day that we're working on these things. So when we understand what alert level 2 looks like early next week, we'll have a better feel of how we can train. I think you can see, I think the Warriors are training like 10 at a time or something like that. And it might be the same sort of situation for us here in Wellington. So we'll try and assemble as many players as we can here in Wellington, hopefully train as a team. If not, maybe it's 2 units of 10, don't know, no more next week, with a view to going over to Australia at some stage in July, doing 2 weeks again there, again in the absence of a Trans-Tasman bubble, and then looking at a period outside of a quarantine situation, and then straight into the resumption of the season.
So it would be every club would come back into some sort of training period before a resumption of the season. Has that been spoken about yet?
Yeah, I think so. And again, that's we work into New Zealand government guidelines. They're working to Australian government guidelines, and it will be at what stage they can get back together. Whether it is, can they get back together in a hub situation like we're going to do. And I think we've talked about it, how it's most likely going to be that, in the same way the NRL's done it, that we will probably base ourselves in a single Australian state to play out of a single Australian city and to have all the games done at one, two, maybe three venues. And to be honest, that's the things that no one knows the answers to those questions yet. We're just trying to get our head around about what
the rest of the season. It's on Suncorp. The pitch will hold up excellently well.
I think it's – yeah, I mean – To be fair, we haven't decided what Australian state it's going to be in, right? But it's most likely, logistically, it would make sense that it's New South Wales, given that almost half of the clubs are in New South Wales anyway. But it might not be. It might be that we actually end up going somewhere like another base, if it makes sense. But again, those things haven't been decided.
Player contracts. Obviously, the players would be uncontracted for August. It would be pre-season for next season normally. How does it work trying to get players who would have normally finish their contract and left at the end of June is the normal end? Am I right about that?
May.
So how does that work for getting players back or bringing them back, and financially, how does that all work out?
So, there's a couple of components to that. One is, like, ultimately, we want to resume the competition with as much integrity as we can do. And by that, you know, you kind of say as close as you can be to what your squad was at the end of the season, you want clubs to go into the new season and the resumption of the season. However, that's probably going to be unlikely because some clubs will lose players. The fact that the contracts are due or have expired at 30th May, players can go and get jobs wherever they want to. If they can get jobs somewhere else, I mean, number one, good play, fair play to them because it'll be tough. But they might. Some might say, you know what, I'll go back home, or I don't really want to play anymore, or I'm going back to Europe or wherever my base is, and I don't really want to go back to Australia to play. So, don't know. So, but undoubtedly, some clubs will lose players. But you want to keep them close as you can to the integrity of the competition by retaining as many of those players as you can do. So it's like for like. To that extent, then, and this is a discussion that we have to have as a club, is rolling over players' contracts month on month until the league is complete, which is, let's say, August to September. Now, that's all well and good, but there is financial implications with that. And at this stage, we still don't know how much of the central distribution is going to be allocated back to clubs. We have absolutely no idea, because there's going to be a cost to doing a hub and spoke type solution, which all has to be absorbed by the leagues. So they're going to have to take some of the Fox broadcast fee, the $12 million they did pay to afford that. How much of that? We don't know. We're going to work through that. And then under the old scheme, you know, when FFA ran the competition, which is still ostensibly the case now, FFA used to take a skim off the top of that for their own purposes, right? And we don't know how much that's going to be at this stage either. So there's a lot of financial pressure on all of the clubs, because we might have to extend contracts where you don't normally budget for that, especially in June. Most of our financial years are July to June. So for us at Wellington Phoenix, we tend to budget for X number of players coming on contract at the end of May. Then you run a smaller squad through June, July, August, and then you bring start. And we've got 16 contracted players now, right? Which is actually much more than we've tended to have in the past. So the implications are less on us, but traditionally what we've done is run smaller squads and then brought them players in as the coach. We've brought the coach on and he's decided what kind of player we want. And the positive for that is, as you sign players later, you can actually spend more money.
Because you haven't spent it earlier.
You haven't spent it earlier. So you might have 2 or 3 months of salary you can just lump on. And as annualized salary, you're actually paying more than you could otherwise afford. So there's pros and cons. But if we have to extend all of these players' contracts, then we'll have to start paying them from through May, June, July, all the way through to the end of season, which could be August, September. And we don't know yet.
I mean, this is probably far too far away to start thinking about. But next season, the 2020/21 season, has there been any talk about what that looks like? Like, if this season doesn't finish until the end of August, so are we going to go for a normal October start, or?
I don't know. I have an opinion on that, which I've floated with the league, and I think we should potentially start later. Mm-hmm. And the major reason for that is, if you remember the end of the league until it was suspended, we were playing a couple of games behind closed doors. And if you look at it on the TV, it just didn't have any atmosphere. It was so flat. It was not a good look. But what I've suggested is that we actually push it out. If we do the final series and it finishes in August, September, then potentially you go back and you have a break, or, you know, you could do your FFA Cup games. But if we look to start in November, December, it minimises those games that are played behind closed doors with no atmosphere. And also it gives more chance when we do start in January, February, for those, especially for those clubs like Victory and Wanderers, who rely heavily on their gate takings and the season tickets, which we do as well, but not so much as those clubs. It gives you the most chance to maximise revenue from those sources. If we're assuming, and that, again, nobody really knows, but the advice that we're being told is that potentially Stadia can open again in January 2021, and then we can hit the ground running in 2021, open Stadia, all the fans back in, and they may have only lost, what, 4 rounds if we start in December, where it's behind closed doors. I don't think we can wait indefinitely. I don't think we could wait till January. Maybe we could, I don't know. But the longer you push it out, of course, the longer you're off the screens and you're off people's radar and you lose traction with all your members and all that kind of stuff. So I think we have to come back prior to January. It's just how early earlier than that. But I certainly would be a fan of starting slightly later so we can play to the fans in the stadium again. Not only because it's great for the fans to be able to turn up and watch the teams again. But the product on TV looks awful with no fans in the stadium.
Yeah, it was interesting watching those games where they were kind of zooming in on the two fans who were watching through like a little gap in the gate. And it's like, A, we shouldn't really be celebrating the fact that these guys have travelled interstate to watch their team through a gate. But also, that was sad, wasn't it? It was just sad watching it like that. So
And they were zooming in on Marvin, the Mariners mascot. And that was, what, about 30 degrees, and the poor guy was sitting in this huge mascot in 30 degrees, and he was the only fan in the stadium. It just looks odd. I mean, sport is not sport without fans, right? So,
well, it's an entertainment product, isn't it? If it's not entertaining anybody, it's not what it is at its core. And especially football, especially the A-League, where the atmosphere that supporters groups create is so huge. It's just
it's the major proposition of the sport, to be honest, is the interactive nature of the game with the fans, which is so much more than you get in New Zealand and rugby, and it's obviously so much more than rugby league and AFL in Australia.
Yeah. The impact of this on the club as a business, obviously you guys are a business, you pay people, and all businesses are impacted at this point in time. How have you guys approached trying to keep the club going from that perspective, ignoring the fact that we have players in football and can't play games, but what changes have you made to keep the club going over an uncertain period?
So we do a lot of this. So we do a lot of Zoom at the start. I'll tell you, as a basic... the basic proposition that Rob Morrison said to me going into this is the board and the owners are very supportive on retaining as much of the club as he can. So he's got other businesses, and all the board have got other businesses, and they've laid off staff, right? But they realise that we're in quite a unique position with the club where we're at. It's taken a lot of years, as all of you will appreciate, taken a lot of years to get, and a lot of heartache to get where we've got to. We finally have got not only a competitive team, but the team with the best form going into the business end of the season. And they've realised that and gone, well, we can't jeopardise that now. He wants to keep as many of the staff and players as he can. So we've not laid off anybody. We have taken reduction in pay. We have applied for the government wage subsidy, which was very much appreciated, but to be honest, doesn't go a long way to... enabling us to pay the players, especially the players. It doesn't go a long way to enabling us to pay our payroll any more than past the first month. And it didn't even cover the first month's payment, but that's okay. It was still very much appreciated. You would have seen that we have put the academy into hiatus. And despite what some media commentators were saying, it's not shut down and it's not going to come back in a reduced capacity. It'll come back bigger. And the reason we had to do that, because to be honest, it's ethically, I didn't feel like we could, because as you all know, we charge parents for their boys to be in that program.
Yep.
And I didn't feel like ethically we could continue to charge parents when there was no training and there was no games. So we decided, right, we'll put it on hiatus until we can come such time that we can come back and train and play games. Now, those two things might not happen at the same time either, because Alert Level 2 may allow us to train, but it doesn't necessarily mean that Capital Football is going to resume any of its competitions. And one of the major precepts of the academy is that the players are playing competitive games. It's all built around competitive games. It's the academy, the reserve side team, everything. It all flows through from that. So we'll have a look at that and how it plays out. But we're still paying those coaches as well through the subsidy scheme, and we're hopeful. And this will be the government's budget is next Thursday. We're looking forward to that, to seeing if there's any relief in both the events and the sports spaces for clubs like Wellington Phoenix, or even New Zealand football as a whole. And that will enable us to keep on the coaches in the academy even longer than we are currently doing. And what it means for us, for our staff members as well. It really will the financials it's not just us. This is the entire economy around the world, right? And we're very much going to be affected by how much revenue we can continue to generate in this little bleak period. And if there is any more support coming from government through whatever channels that potentially could come through, whether it has to come through New Zealand Football, we don't know. But if the budget gives some relief to events, I've been talking to Shane Harmon. He's pretty close with the event industry there, and he's thinking that that potentially maybe there is some relief for events. And if we're an events business, maybe we can make an application to government in that regard as well. So, again, it's day by day. We have another payday due at the end of next week, and it will literally come down to the wire. as to how we can pay players and staff without knowing whether if any income's coming in. And, you know, I included in that the Fox money, which we do. I ran Greg O'Rourke earlier on in the week and he said, look, I actually can't tell you. We don't know how much money's going to flow through the club. So, I mean, we're no different. I mean, this is happening everywhere, right? So, yeah, it's really just day by day and trying to get through.
Are the players and the staff supportive of what the club is doing for them? Obviously, it's a tough time for them as well. They want to be playing football and making it happen and running it. Are they on board with what you're trying to do to keep them on the payroll?
Yeah. So we've had a couple of conferences with the players and as soon as things, well, as much as I could, I've kept them up to date with everything I know. I think it was encouraging when the league was put on suspension that Wellington Phoenix was only one of really three clubs that continue to pay players at 100%.
Yeah.
So we, and again, that was a directive from the owners. So pretty much immediately we put all the players on annual leave, which enabled us to play them at 100%, put in the application with the wage subsidy, which came through, which helped a little bit. But it did enable us to keep everybody at 100%. Once annual leave was exhausted, which to be fair was, to be honest, was most of last month's pay. So not many players were impacted last month in their pay packets with the reduction in salaries. But the decision we've made is that any reduction is across the board, right? So it's not players that are doing it. It's not just staff. It's not just me. Everyone, if we're going to reduce staff salaries, it'll be across the board from, you know, me all the way through. And I think they've been okay. I think they've been happy that you know, we didn't go down the Perth Glory route or the Jets route or whatever and put people on what they have in Australia, which is that stand down period, which is basically no pay.
Yeah.
We continue to pay them. Boofy's been good. They've been really good with their training. So they have Zoom, trainings just like this.
I love that.
They get together and they do whatever it is that Aidan Wivel puts together for them. And then I was just around, I've got a, just near where I live, I've got a park down here and I was went out for a run one afternoon. I saw Stefan Marinovic running around the park as well. So I think he doesn't actually live too far from me.
Yeah.
But I know they're out there doing their trainings. They're pros, right? They're dedicated.
Absolutely.
And we know for a fact that as soon as they come back in and they get the bifold fat test done, they haven't been doing their training, it'll be it'll come out pretty quick. So, Stevie Taylor rang me the other day and he was, you know what he's like, he's just so enthusiastic. He's such a great leader.
Yeah.
They're chomping at the bit to get back to Australia to complete the season. Yes, it'll be tough. They'll be away from their families. But they really do believe in themselves, as I think we as staff and the board and the owners do, and I think as the fans do as well.
Absolutely.
They really do believe that we could do something special this year, and the players believe it amongst themselves. So it's positive in that regard. I am concerned that with the uncertainty around the finances, how that's going to play out. But like I say, it's just really one day at a time.
That's the stuff you have to take day by day when you literally don't know what's coming in, I guess. Mm. To go back briefly to the academy stuff that you mentioned before, you said that the academy will come back bigger. What do you imagine that looks like? A bigger academy.
So we were working on a couple of really, really good expansion ideas for the academy, which literally, it was so disappointing. The three major things that were really disappointing with COVID when it came through. One was that we were really close on W League. Two was that the expansion of the academy, where we had two really good initiatives that we were close on. And three was how well the team was doing. All of those things were put on hold. Now, the resumption of the A-League will come back stronger.
Yeah.
That'll happen in due course. Now, the other two, I'm still really positive that they will eventuate and that something will happen in those spaces. But to be honest, we've kind of gone, because the partners that we were working with in on those initiatives, they've got their own massive issues. And so we've kind of gone, and in fact, I made a note today, I'm just going to touch base with them this week and just say, look, I'm not pressuring you to reinstigate the work we're doing in the space, but we are ready to come back and start talking about this, some of these initiatives when you are. So the academy one is really to have a more complete solution for the players in the academy, expanding it both up in terms of the age group, up one end at the top end, and then expanding it down the bottom end as well. So I think one of these ideas was really exciting. And like I say, we were maybe 80%, 85% of the way there. It had a lot of momentum. The partner that we were working with was really excited and buzzing about it, and they were pushing it really hard. which would enable us, and I can't go into details because they haven't gone through their own processes.
I understand that, yeah.
But it would enable us to have another option for players coming out the other end, which would be quite exciting for them. And not only for that, but it will enable us to expand the academy into different areas, which would be good for football in general in New Zealand.
Absolutely.
And football fans. So we're really excited about that. And then there were a couple of other ideas around the academy, which we were working on together, which would enable us to have, you know, more bases around and more players to be viewing and all that sort of thing. And again, the partners associated with that were really excited about it and really keen to move on it. And same with the W League. We were, you know, we had really good momentum, really good momentum. And I, you know, there was, you know, I think I've spoken about this before. There was probably only one W League license up for grabs in season 2021. And I was, you know, we were just cracking on and pushing as hard as we can. The further I got down the working on the project, the more I was confident getting, actually, I think this could be us. I think this could be us that's going to get their license because the solution was really, really good. And it was getting, I was talking to the guys at FFA/the leagues and they were saying, this is really an exciting way of cutting this thing up. And when you roll on top of that, the potential of a World Cup here in a couple of, you know, joint bid for a couple of years,
you roll it all together
and you go, oh God, this thing could actually fly.
Yeah.
And I actually think our proposition was a very, very strong one. And again, really good momentum. The partner was working, they were right behind it. I'd spoken to a lot of people in the periphery and they were going, oh yeah, we could be part of that. We could do this and this. And the feedback was really good coming out of the league in the FFA. And then of course, the partner that we were talking to is significantly impacted by COVID. Now,
right.
It doesn't mean that it can't still happen. It just means it might take, we might just have to be softly in how we continue to develop it. But you know, it could all come together and, you know, what are we now, May? Well, no, June. In June we should know about the World Cup, right? Yeah. I think that's the timeline, mid-June sometime.
Ella's nodding her head, so I believe her.
Yep. Yeah, I think there's a congress in Switzerland sometime, mid-June.
Mid-June, yeah.
June 20. June 3. All right, perfect, you know. That would work perfect, you know, because June 3, that's only 3 weeks away, 2 weeks just over. We could actually start cracking into it then because if that happens, that's serious momentum.
Yeah. Are there many building blocks being laid inside New Zealand or Wellington for that W League team yet? Is thought of like female academy, things like that come up yet at all? Or is that pie in the sky thinking?
We're kind of doing it like a bit of like one step in front of the other. The first thing is once we get the W League, we've already started considering what a W League academy would look like. To be honest, I've done a lot of work in that space as well. I mean, 100% we would open up a women's academy. No doubt about it. I suppose it is a challenge, is that, and I've had a few chats with New Zealand football, and the issue with it, as you all know, there's still most of the future women's program is still based in Auckland, right? And it's like, how do we roll that all together? If we've got if it's a Wellington, and I've said to guys at NZF, and I've got to be absolutely clear here, they have been, in terms of working on a W League solution, NZF have been fantastic. It's light and day compared to how it was working with the previous regime.
Yeah.
There's actually, everyone is pulling in the same direction, which is why it's given me a lot of confidence.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they're coming to the table with a lot of money, right? Because no one has a lot of money these days. But
they're not using football.
Exactly. But what it is happening is that those guys really understand that this is our best and our only opportunity to get it. And they're all pulling in the same direction. And there's a real willingness to work together. And we've made some really good advances. Now, nothing's set in stone. We haven't signed anything. I've done any contracts, nothing like that.
Yeah.
But everyone is going, this makes sense. The Future Ferns program, we haven't resolved. Now we've got some initiatives around that. I think there are some ways that we can make it work, especially with the way we're potentially setting it up. I think there are some real ways that we can make it work that will kind of mitigate some of that. That would be just a great solution for the girls and the women in the program. So I'm less concerned about that, but we'd certainly want to have some sort of, in fact, you have to, under the terms of our license agreement, we actually have to have an academy, right? So it would be the same for the W League. We have to have a women's academy. And I said to the guys up in NZF, it's not the Auckland Phoenix, right? We're not going to have a women's academy based in Auckland. we have a women's academy. It's going to be based down here in Wellington. All our resources are down here. All the coaches will be down here. We'll just have to make it work. But there are ways to make it happen.
Have you thought about potential players? Has it got that far down the line talking to Ferns or anything like that? Or is it just kind of still very much in the planning stage?
I haven't spoken to the Ferns direct, but I've spoken to NZF to say, you start thinking about, if we're going to do this, who do you want to start bringing back, either from overseas? Who are the girls that are in your program at the moment in Auckland, who you'd be looking at to roll into the program? Because, again, as a partnership, it would be very much that we'd be looking on to work with New Zealand Football on the selection of those players.
Yeah. Speaking of New Zealand Football, they've announced, I think it was this time last week or maybe a little bit later than that, their Football in New Zealand review coming out of COVID-19. And I think their press release mentioned that the Phoenix are involved in those conversations. What kind of talks have you had with them about what that will look like and what your involvement will be in that?
We haven't had those discussions with that program. Now, that's literally, like you said, they've just announced it last 2 weeks.
Okay, so it's very much just in the announcement stage and indicating that they want to talk to you?
Yeah, that's right. And it is good now because we do have those conversations, you know. We talked to Andy Boyens. I talked to Danny Hay. We talked to these guys. This is probably slightly more, and it's not the operational side. It's more going to be in the structure. And now we've got some, you know, I think, you know, we've got some pretty firm ideas about how we as a club think we should be as part of that any review, but also basically how NZF should be structured going forward. So we'll be interested in those conversations. But the other positive thing is at the moment and in fact last night and the next couple of nights, we're having as a stakeholder, we're engaged with the new applicants to the EXCO, the New Zealand Football EXCO.
Okay.
So we've been having we've been having interviews on Zoom, and Wellington Phoenix is a stakeholder, so we get one vote. But there's us, the National League teams, Feds. We're all been having interviews with the EXCO members just so that we can get a sense of what these EXCO members going on, or the potential EXCO members going on, are like, and how they are reacting to, or what their views are on New Zealand football, what their vision is for New Zealand football, and how they will meet the needs of the stakeholders involved in it. So that's, and as we talk about that, of course, a lot of this will be informing that review as it goes on as well, because a lot of those EXCO members who will get elected will be part of that program as well, or that review as well.
Yeah. To bring it back to the A-League, kind of maybe to wrap it up, and I don't want to end on a bit of a downer, but are you worried at all about the future of the A-League, whether it's the virus stopping us from able to play, or Fox wanting to pull their money out? Like, are you worried at all beyond anything, just the uncertainty?
No, I'm not worried about it. I really do trust the people in charge. Look, throughout this, you know, throughout the process, obviously the state of the core broadcaster is important. So people have been, you know, considering what ifs. But I think Fox coming back is, and I think now Fox are making noises that they do want to be in there for the long term, which is great. Look, there's a lot of there's a lot of smart people in the leagues group now who won't let this thing die. If it does die, they will go down fighting, right? They will pull out all the stops. There are different ways of doing things these days. I'm reasonably confident that it's not gonna finish like this. Because we all know the A-League goes under, it's not starting up again.
Yeah.
And especially for New Zealand. And I think that's really important, that the Wellington Phoenix has to survive this. We really do have to survive this, because if we don't and we get to that stage where we can't carry on Phoenix financially, then there won't be another New Zealand team in the A-League for 5, 6, 10 years.
Yeah.
It's going to be some time, right? So the Wellington Phoenix has to survive. That's absolutely crucial. And also everything else that we're hanging off this, like the academy structure and the W League team, will be set back years and years and years, and that just can't happen. But that's why we have to get the financials right, because we can't. The numbers now are big. The holes at the bottom and the end are big numbers now, and we just can't. The owners can't. Even the owners, with all the goodwill in the world, they couldn't do that by themselves. Without, you know, you have to remember that, you know, the Fox broadcasters, 40% revenue of the Wellington Phoenix.
Absolutely.
That's a big number. You know, it's more so for other clubs and less so for other clubs. You know? But at that kind of level, that's a big number for us. And there's no way that even our owners could sustain those kind of losses.
So losing Fox will be very bad, but the indication is that Fox are on for the long
haul. I don't think losing Fox is currently on the table, but losing Fox without a replacement would be, and I don't think there would ever not be a replacement, but at that, you know, at that level, you know, someone who's ready to step in right away, someone who's ready to, who has not only that, but has the wherewithal, like who could do the broadcast, for example.
Exactly.
Because that's a huge part of it is the cost of the broadcast. And it's not inexpensive to do the broadcast of A-League.
Yeah.
You know, over the time, they've added in more cameras and, you know, VAR.
Well, maybe if we downgrade the broadcast, we wouldn't have VAR anymore. That would be a positive, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think I think they said it in the premiership as well. I just don't think you can go back.
No.
You know, once it's in, it's got so hard to go back.
No, exactly. IFAB's only expanding it, right? Anyway, unless there is anything pressing from the crowd, I think we'll wrap up there. Thank you very much for joining us, Domi. Really appreciate you coming on and giving up your time and answering that you obviously have no idea about some of the answers to, but much appreciated, and all the best with trying to work out some of those holes and making sure that everything keeps ticking over.
Can I just say as well that as a club, we have been genuinely honoured by the response from fans. You know, when the season halted, we didn't have one single person coming to us saying, can I get a refund? Not one single person. We sent that email out that went out today, which is a bit of a holding pattern. And next week, we'll go out for some offers as well. Because obviously, for us, it's important that we retain as much revenue as we can. And one of the guys just sent me a note saying he had, and this has happened up until now. We've had people come saying, just keep my money, keep my money, keep my money. And I think today, when we sent that email out, we had 20 to 30 email replies to that email that we sent out saying, don't worry about my season ticket money, you can just keep it. And I was, you know, genuinely touched, because we thought that if everybody wanted their money back, it would be decent wedge of money. It'd be probably $40,000-$50,000 if everybody said, I want my two games back. Now, we'll come up and send some stuff out next week, which will hopefully mitigate some of that. But that would hurt us. That would certainly hurt us. It would make it just the size of the thing that much more difficult. But I know, just astounded by the fact that we've had not one person say, I want my money back, and everybody's just saying, please just keep my money. We just want to see you guys complete the season and do so well in the finals. And, you know, the guys, we have our own little WhatsApp group, and the guys were just saying how great our fan base is. And I said, you know, we've kind of known it for a long time. We knew it when the, you know, Save the Knicks campaign came out. That really does bring out the best in people.
5 years ago now, Domi. Seems like an age ago,
doesn't it? 5 years ago. You know, we were really up against the wall, really up against the wall. And looking back on it now, we could have gone. And I don't know, you know, there were a couple of things that saved us. One was the job that Rob did with the FFA at the time. And two was the fact that the fans, you know, came together
on both sides of the
show their support.
Yeah.
And that's another thing, on both sides of the Tasman. Yeah. And there was a minority of people saying, yeah, get rid of them, we'll bring in Tasmania, whatever. But most of them said, no, they're an integral part of the competition now. And, you know, I think that's the difference that you guys as Yellow Fever and everything you guys do and what people see on the TV and the shirts off stuff and the after-match function, the way you entertain the fans that come back and the way you guys travel and Yellow Fever travel and how they integrate with fans over there. I think it is, you know, it's really, really, you know, we like to think it is everybody's second team. And, you know, sure, it's not everyone's, but I think that's hugely down to how good our fan base is and how they really do appreciate
it. I can assure you that even if the Phoenix are playing behind closed doors, there will be many shirts coming off and lots of households around the country and on Zoom meetings and on Zoom calls, if that's our new version of the pub. But I say that because I know that the fans will absolutely get behind it, but I also know that the Phoenix are going to keep winning. So thank you very much, Domi, for coming on board. It is very nice to talk to you. Hope you're doing well. Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys. All good.
That was a good chat with Domi, wasn't it? He was pretty upfront about a lot of things, and I believe him when he says that he believes that the Phoenix will keep going and the league will be back. I didn't get any sign from him that he didn't actually fully believe that, so that fills me with a little bit more confidence than I had beforehand.
I think it's good because he was clearly being honest and genuine in his answer there. Yeah. Like you can tell that there's a real belief that that will happen. But it also gives, a little bit of credence to some of those fears. You know, the things he's saying he doesn't think are going to happen are, you know, the things that are speculated on in the media. And you know, the fact that he's responding directly to those says that those, you know, are things they're discussing behind closed doors as well of whether or not, you know, maybe Fox are in such financial difficulty they're going to fold. And, you know, that kind of stuff is a real possibility that they're planning for. But the fact that they're planning for it gives me some confidence, which is really good. And I think, yeah, there's certainly a genuine passion to keep this thing going coming from Domi and clearly from the owners as well. Yeah. So that's fantastic.
Ella, obviously a bit of W League information in there as well, the stuff that we didn't know beforehand.
Yeah,
but not great that it's all been put on hold, I guess.
Not great, but also honestly not surprising.
Understandable, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's that classic, you know, there's been quite a few reports that have come out in the last couple of weeks about how, you know, in terms, obviously everyone's going to be affected by what's going on at the moment, but obviously women's football being, you know, several decades of development kind of behind the men's game, it's going to be kind of more severely hit. And obviously if you're trying to start up a team, now's not a great time to do it. Yeah, but I mean, just saying that there is still a very strong desire to push forward with that as possible, that's obviously great to see, because it will be so easy to go, now maybe not, you know, too hard basket. Obviously having the World Cup bid, you know, the decision on that coming up soon, that, you know, potentially could really change the dynamics of that conversation, because, you know, obviously talk about the, you know, legacy and all that, you know, kind of buzzwordy thing, but it would absolutely make sense at this particular point in time to go, well, W Leagues, should that expand? Dwelling to that should be their entry point, because if you're building to a truly joint World Cup, then, you know, it's all part of that conversation.
And that'll join it beyond just having stadiums in two different countries. That will join it much further than that. So,
exactly.
Oh, cool.
I think it's an interesting one, because I think you're absolutely right. It's a really good chance to kind of reset things in many ways, and that's going to be fantastic and maybe create some new opportunities. But I think we've just got to hope that the damage isn't so bad that it actually sets things back even further. You know, we, in some ways, for stuff like the W League and us getting a chance in there and things like Domi's talking about, you know, the rebuild of the academy and that kind of stuff, a little bit of hurt's not necessarily a bad thing here, right? Like some economic kind of reset might help kind of spurn some of the change that's needed around what the league structure looks like and what that, you know, all of that stuff looks like. But we don't need the damage to be so bad that, you know, the league is on the bones of its ass and we're having to spend the next 5 years just keeping the thing rolling, because that'll set back things like, you know, the W League discussion so much further. I think you could feasibly see, if the FFA and Fox and, you know, all the clubs are struggling that much, the W League might fold while the A League keeps running, or something horrendous like that. That would just be the worst possible outcome.
Yeah. I mean, there has been obviously some speculation as to, you know, to what happens to the W League, because it's such a, it's not been really part of the conversation at the moment, because the league finished when it did. So it's not needed to be from a kind of an immediate what happens next kind of point of view. But I think the Sydney chairman was quoted in The Guardian a couple of weeks ago saying that, you know, in terms of the investment that's already gone into the W League, it would be insanity to not continue with it. And also if you look at it from a point of view of, you don't actually have to put in as much money into the women's game to get as much returns as what you do get. So from a financial perspective, that also just doesn't make sense. But
See, my concern is that, you know, as much as the Knicks owners are showing a willingness to kind of take that burden, I question whether that we won't lose a couple of A-League clubs and therefore a couple of W-League clubs, especially you'd expect someone like the Mariners to be a, you know, one of the forefront kind of new franchises for the W League, but yet they're one of the most financially struggling ones.
Well, I think that the A League could sustain itself if we lost two clubs, for example. It would have to scale back a little bit.
And that would affect the W League even more, totally. I think.
Yeah.
I mean, worth bearing in mind, I guess, that there is currently a W League team without an A League club, so it can be done, but obviously that's different to having formally had the support of an A League team and then having to exist on your own kind of thing.
Yeah. It was interesting that he touched on the NRL trying to like force itself back really quickly and juxtapose that against.
Force itself around NRL teams, mate.
Well, no, I don't want to make jokes like that on the podcast. As opposed to the A-League, which is taking a bit more of a softy-softy approach. But I thought it might have been more to do with the broadcasting, but it sounds like that wasn't the case. Did you get that vibe from Domi as well?
Was it interesting that you frame it that way because... Arguably, the A-League tried to force hardest in terms of the actual lockdown and the fact the Phoenix were over there. So I think, like, in that scheme of things, it was very clear that back then, Fox wanted it to continue. We were under a hell of a lot of pressure. So I think there's no suggestion that the broadcaster wasn't heavily involved in a lot of how those decisions have gone on all fronts. It just happens to have gone differently for us because the A-League tried it and then had to step back. And so I think everyone rightly has gone, well, rushing straight back in immediately again would be an insane thing to do. We need to take a deep breath. Whereas, you know, the NRL paused and wasn't trying to do anything quite so crazy. Yeah. And so they've kind of had a bit of a chance to have that deep breath.
The difference was that they weren't in the middle of their season, having played 80% of it. So I can see from an A-League perspective. I did forget that this time, two months ago, we were saying how stupid is it that they're trying to continue this thing. That's a good point. I think given that the A-League is 80% of the way through the season, it helps it in some ways because you can play it entirely in a month, and it is at the detriment in other ways in that you have that trying to get as close as possible. He had a nice word for it. I can't remember what it was, but it certainly makes it tougher from that perspective. Trying to bring all the players back is not going to happen. Like Davila coming back, maybe. He's got a newborn child in Mexico. Why would he come back? Unless they could bring his family with him, and I don't know. Makes it tough from that perspective. What do you think of Domi's plan for next season of kind of pushing it a little bit later and maybe condensing it slightly? It seems obvious, doesn't it?
It does, but I mean, that's going straight into when it's, you know, really hot. Do we have another bushfire season? True. Like what kind of happens from that perspective?
Yeah, that's a good point. I think we just might end up in the situation where we have simultaneous games. Like the broadcast has always said, we can't have two games at 7:30 p.m. on a Saturday, but we might just end up in that situation where that's the way to play it out.
Yep. And I mean, we're already talking about like if this August proposal goes ahead, you're talking 3 week, that kind of stuff anyway. There's no reason a season can't be compressed, not necessarily to that level, but you know, you can do, compressed schedules for short periods of time. You know, we've seen that across the holiday period in previous seasons where they, you know, are playing every 3 or 4 days, and it's fantastic when we're all on holiday, we can all watch it. Yeah. There's no reason that can't be a thing during a period of the rest of the season to try and make something happen. But I did think it's interesting that the one thing I took away from Domi talking about the compressed season, the later start to the season, was feeling that they couldn't wait till January to start because then you lose, you know, you're out of the consciousness too much. I mean, in reality, if we're still playing in September, October to finish this season, you're not really out of the mind for that long. Like I that wouldn't be a concern of mine. I think starting in January, if that's when we're allowed to go back to stadiums, would make total sense to me. And in reality, that's a hell of a lot shorter period out of the public eye than the usual off season, which is, to be honest, so bloody long.
And the other thing with that is that we're all chomping at the bit to go back to activities, and we will still be in December. Like it's very unlikely that we're going to have any sporting events that we can go to. We might be able to watch things from overseas, but being able to go to events is going to be very hard for a long period of time. And you tell me that I can go and watch the Phoenix in January at Westpac Stadium, and there's going to be 15,000 people there. Like,
what if I tell you you've got to sit 10 seats away from everyone, though? Will the fever zone be the same?
To be fair, I think people enjoy my company better if they're 10 seats away. So just one man lonesome drumming in the middle of the zone.
It certainly will be a unique experience, I think, when we are allowed to go back to stadiums. I think it'll be quite different. But as you say, just being back in a stadium will in itself be pretty amazing.
Yeah, it'll be whether that the Phoenix can sustain themselves long enough to have that be the same event that we're used to and the same level of product on show. Anything else? Anything else you picked up on from the chat with Domi? Anybody? Blank faces around? Oh, Frosty?
The Academy was interesting.
Yeah, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah. The fact that, I mean, everyone's kind of focusing on the senior parts of the Academy, I think, you know, that they're shutting that down. But realistically, while it's probably not a self-funding part of the business, it is an income-generating part of the business, and at least with, you know, the fees of the kids. So, you know, if they've had the chance to rethink it and make it bigger or better or stronger, that'd be interesting, really interesting.
Yeah.
He did also mention that there'd be a women's academy.
Well, that would be part of bringing in a W League team. So, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just whether we can get those, he called them, or partners, someone, whether they can bounce back strong enough to be able to keep that expansion going. And you'd hope they would be able to, but no guarantee in the world we're in, right?
No, I mean, there's never any guarantees at the best of times, let alone now. But, you know, it was the one thing that I thought Domi sounded the most bullish about. I mean, he always sounds pretty confident anyway, but that he was kind of, he was proffering information rather than kind of responding. I took that as a really positive sign.
yeah, expanding the academy is only good. We've seen what the academy's done, so expand the academy out, make it and more pathways for players. So it's not the the Phoenix first team is the be all and end all, which is how I interpreted what he was saying. In order to attract people, in order to attract people from other places to join the academy set up, has that can only be make the academy stronger in my view.
I wonder if that's a little bit to do with the success of Saprit and to a lesser extent, you know, the potential success of Kakache generating money for the club out of developing academy players. I mean, that's certainly going to make them feel a lot better about the end result, is that we're now starting to see a consistent standard of players coming through. So expanding it, you know, pre-COVID, you probably wouldn't have batted an eyelid about that.
No, it'd be it's just COVID. No-brainer.
Got everyone on.
Yeah. We'll move on to New Zealand football then, which it has been an interesting week where basically Des Buckingham has been relieved of his duties from under-23's Olympic the Olympics, isn't it? Was it postponed to 2021, and New Zealand football have released a statement saying that Danny Hay will lead the team now instead of Des Buckingham because of the delay to the program to the Olympics to be next year, and that they wish Des Buckingham all the best with his future. Do we believe this for a second, that it's purely because of COVID-19 that they're getting rid of Des Buckingham?
In their defense, they haven't said that specifically.
Well,
they've basically fallen back on that there's a contract end date. There was an end date for Des's contract, there was a start date for Danny taking over. And even though the Danny part wasn't public previously, that was an agreement that exists within his contract, and Des's has an end date, which was the end of the Olympics. And they're basically saying, we're not going to modify those dates because of the coronavirus.
But surely in a sane situation, you extend that so your coach who qualified you and all the players are fully supportive of keeping to continue. Surely you extend that contract.
I mean, there's arguments both ways, but I think it's unfair to frame it as they're ending his contract of COVID.
That's fair.
They're just choosing not to modify it, which I think is how they've tried to frame it. I don't necessarily agree with it because I think he's a very good coach, but I don't think their reasoning is the issue I have with any of it. I think my biggest problem is that I think we all agree Des is a fantastic coach, and he's probably lost to New Zealand
forever
because of this. Yeah. You know, he's been kicked by New Zealand football a couple of times now, and I don't imagine that he's going to take it lying down and go, oh yeah, sure, I'll come back and sign another job and wait for you to do it again. I would assume he'll look elsewhere, and fair enough.
Frosty?
That tweet thread that it was Chris James, I think, said, worth digging up if you can get a chance to, but basically he was kind of didn't try to get into the digs of New Zealand football with a large F, you know, but just more the fact that we've got a coach who's given of himself, and he's not just been giving, he's also been very successful. In fact, I can't for the life of me think at any time he's actually realistically failed at, you know, whether it's been with the Knicks as the interim coach,
yeah.
The under-20s, very successful, and was very unlucky that they were got knocked out then, and the 23s taking them to a Nations Cup against full teams in the islands in very, very tough conditions and being successful there. I mean, I think it doesn't set a good precedent for getting people enthusiastic about, you know, coaches have to donate a lot of time and effort for very little reward, you know, and if I was a coach and I saw that happen, I'd really think twice about putting my hand up for that any job. So it's not just disappointing for Des, it's disappointing for, you know, retaining good football people in this country.
Yeah, I'm going to clarify one little thing you said. The Nations Cup was a plan, they haven't actually gone and played it, but he was going to take them to the Nations Cup as part of the Olympic prep. We haven't mentioned that, the Nations Cup have been cancelled.
Not Nations Cup, what qualifiers. Was the islands?
So qualifiers against other teams, but I agree with you. I think that it's a shame that someone who has been, I mean, the story, I think Vorman posted a story about when Fritz Schmidt resigned, Dez was on holiday in the UK at the time and ended his holiday early and flew straight back so that he coached the team on his own dime. And like, that shows the level of commitment he was showing to the team, producing good results. And Danny Hay was kind of already freezing him out slightly. He removed him from being an assistant coach, which you can say that when a new coach comes in, they'll clear out and bring their own staff in. But I think Danny Hay would have been a much stronger coach with Dez being his assistant. And I think that the setup that we have now is much weaker without him. I'm not excited about watching the All Whites play under Danny Hay at all. I would have been excited about watching the 23s play under Dez Buckingham. And it's a shame that we're going to get 4 years of Hayball now with very little input from anybody who isn't part of Hay's Boys Club.
You kind of bring up Hay's Boys Club, which is, but it's not just Hay. I mean, yeah, sure, they've appointed Danny Hay as the All Whites, but there's a lot of jobs underneath him. As you say, there's assistants, but there's also the under 23s, the under 20s, the under 17s. He didn't get a look in at any of those jobs. I mean, he's already proven himself to be a good junior national coach. Why the hell he doesn't get at least a look in for that? I mean, some of these guys, I've not even come across them in the system before. So, you know, maybe they're great, but they're not proven successful like Dez has been.
Dave?
I was just going to say, it's interesting you talk about the assistant position he was dropped from, because it was one of the things I know we talked about when they first kind of announced that new structure. And admittedly, this wasn't the structure based around Danny, but the kind of previous setup, one of the best things I think we all thought about it was that they were building in that kind of coaching pathway within it, where the age group coaches were working as assistants to the national coach. Yeah. And that structure made a lot of sense. And New Zealand Football themselves were talking it up. Admittedly, this was all, set up by people who are now gone. But I don't know that it necessarily made sense to, you know, throw the baby out with the bathwater. Some of that structure that had been created there, despite having the wrong people in charge of it at the time, made a lot of sense and actually provided a really good pathway. And I guess in many ways, you know, the removal of him as an assistant kind of went unannounced, I guess. But this all confirms what a lot of people have been suspecting, that, you know, we were seeing a complete sea change in all of that structure, which I don't know. And this is not specifically about Dez, you know, obviously I think Dez is a good coach, but I think putting aside, you know, who was involved in this particular scenario, looking at it as a structural thing, if every time we change the head coach, we're going to the entire setup,
yeah,
what kind of pathway is that setting up for any of our coaches coming through? You know, if being the national age group coaches isn't a building block towards bigger and better things, particularly where you're being successful, how are we planning on developing coaches? And I think that would be my question there. And I think, you know, it's really unfortunate that Dez is the one caught up in this, but I think if you put Dez out of it, it's still, I think, is a sad situation to be in, just because of the just because of the structural change to the pathway that creates.
I mean, that's what Chris James' Twitter thread is about, is talking about how we finally have a coach who's come through our system. Obviously, he's not a Kiwi. He's from from the motherland, but he's come through our system. He's coached with the Phoenix. He was assistant coach there for a while, goalkeeper coach there for a while, brought himself through the age groups, showed that he can do stuff, and we're now going to lose him because the old system, the old hoof it style of play that Danny Hay likes has kind of taken over, and that's a shame. I'm going to second what Frosty said about digging out that Chris James thread, because it's on Twitter. If you search, I think it's @ChrisJames10, I think is his Twitter handle, but have a read of that, because it kind of shines a little bit of light on it, but definitely indicative of a bigger problem that we have in New Zealand football and have had for a long time. But yes, I mean, it's uncertain for everything at this time. So things are going to happen, and we're not going to agree with everything, but I think this is a particular one, given that he's the Phoenix have almost burned bridges with him, the way that they handled hiring Dyer instead of him. And now New Zealand football has probably burned their bridges with Dez as well. It's a shame that we're losing him to our game in this country. I think that's where we end for tonight. Obviously, a good chat
with
Domi.
Downer, Pat.
Sorry, I ended up my Domi chat with a downer, and I ended that chat with a downer as well. So that's what we get at this time in coronavirus New Zealand. But oh well. Has anybody got a joke they want to share to bring us back up again? No. Nope. Cool. That's well done, team. Great job, everybody. But yeah, joining me. Thank you for listening to my chat with Domi, and thank you for assisting me with funneling me questions on our Slack channel while I talk to Domi. And thank you for listening as well. Hopefully, we'll be back at some point in the future when we know what we're talking about. Although it sounds like things might be moving a bit quicker now that Fox are back on board, so we might be back next week or the week after. But,
again, it'll be slow, 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 quick.
Yeah, something happened. Something will happen and we'll pot about it. But yeah, thank you for listening. We're back. We'll be back. And yeah, thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.
Shirts off in your own lounge brings you.
Regular CEO Zoom chats bring you.
That's an abuse of power on a video chat.